It is a great pleasure to welcome to Best Ideas 2022, returning MOI Global Instructor Juan Matienzo, the managing partner of Mercor Investment Group, where Juan is responsible for the portfolio. Juan follows deep value principles and prefers companies that trade for less than liquidation value. He's also an amateur painter. Juan holds a BBA and a Master of Clinical Psychology from UDLAP and an MBA from the Harvard Business School. So great to have you back with us today, Juan. I look forward to the three ideas that you will share with us today. So I will now turn it to you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, John. And yeah, we will be discussing three ideas because these are deep value ideas and they're very easy to communicate. So it's easy to communicate how the companies are cheap. And so it'll be three companies then, because otherwise we would just speak for 5 minutes. And you know, the Ben Graham used to recommend buying companies that sell for less than liquidation value. And when you try to do that sort of estimation, you have to you have to find ways to decide how much the assets of a company are worth. So the, for instance, the assets are not cash, of course. Cash is always worth 100%. But then, you know, suppose you have a company you're trying to value and you try to decide what the liquidation value of the company is. And then it has some inventory. And then you have to decide whether the inventory could be sold at full price or less. Usually, it's rarely the case that you can sell it for more. But suppose the company has products that are very obsolescent, so you wouldn't be able to sell them at full price. And so you have to take into account several things when you're trying to decide what the assets of the company you're trying to calculate liquidation value of are really worth. So, but these three cases that I will show you are very, very easy, because even though I would encourage you, if you're interested in these companies, I would encourage you to try to do the calculation of what the assets that are not cash are worth. You can see just by the cash that these companies are cheap. I mean, these companies sell for less than cash minus all liabilities. So that is, if you owned the company in its entirety, you could take some of the cash, pay the liabilities, and then you would be left with more cash. And today, the market cap of the company is less than that. So it's less than the cash that you would have if you pay down all the debts and you know, counted the rest of the cash. So you can see that, you know, it doesn't get easier, simpler in valuation when, you know, in investing, when you're trying to decide whether a company is cheap or not, when you have something like this. And you might think this is too simple, and perhaps rightly, because, you know, these companies have problems, and you know, you would say, well, there must be a reason why they're cheaper than the cash they have in hand minus all the liabilities, and you would be right. But the evidence shows that if you invest, you know, across several of these of opportunities like this ones, you will do fine on average. So there are bad things with these companies, and those bad things might end up costing you more than you expected, and you know, the cash might evaporate. But on average, you'll do fine. And so the first of the companies is called Kikukawa. This company was founded more than a century ago, actually a century, one quarter ago. So at the end of the 19th century, it's been public for six decades. It's a company that manufactures sawmilling and woodworking machines in Japan. It's located in Ise City, and I think it's the first company in Japan that started manufacturing, you know, the sorts of machines for working wood. And you know, the machines are used for cutting and sanding and polishing wood. And most of them are custom made, so the customer tells the company what they want, and together they come up with a machine or an actual line of a production line. They also make other machines, like aluminum alloy machining centers, etc., for railway and aircraft parts, but mostly woodworking machines. It's a small company. The market cap is 4.8 billion yen, so that's equivalent to $42 million or so. And the thing with this company, it's as I told you, I mean, it's been going on for a long time. I mean, it's been functioning for a long time, and it's made money. Not a lot of money, but it does make money, and it's had quite a satisfactory run, I would say. And yet you can buy this company today for a discount of 22% on the cash that it has minus all its liabilities. And that is if you do not include the securities of the companies that the company owns. So this is just the cash. But if you do include the securities, which I think you should, because the securities are stocks of publicly traded companies, so you can check the prices, the market has priced them. So it's not like these are obscure investments that you have no idea how much they are truly worth. But these are publicly traded companies, so that's you have to add a little bit more than 1 billion yen for that. So if you take the cash plus the market value of the publicly traded securities that the company has, then you're down to two-third discount. So what I mean is you're buying at 66% of the cash plus securities. So that's really cheap. I mean, and this is for a company that it's not really that cheap on a PE or a price to free cash flow basis. I mean, on a PBE basis, you're talking about six and change. And on a free cash flow basis, if you take the last 12 months, it's something like 13. The multiple is something like 13. And if you go to, the last 6 years, then the PE is something like 7.5, and the price to free cash flow is something like 10 or 11. Actually 10.4, but so the multiples on earnings and free cash flow are not fantastic, but they're not terrible either. So it's a company that's chugging along, and you get really good downside protection by having this cash and securities that cover everything that you put to buy this company and more. It has retained earnings. It's as you would expect from a company that's been functioning for a long time and that has been doing okay. So the retained earnings are twice as much as the market cap, and the insider ownership is close to 10%. There's a person who. So there's a person that owns 7% of the company, and I don't know who he is, and I've talked to other shareholders and they don't know who he is either. But the insiders together, they own almost 10%. John, do you want to ask me about this company?
Yes. Do you know roughly what their sales are?
Yeah. So let me tell you exactly. So the last year they were roughly 5 billion yen, and they've been going up. From let's say if we go back to 2014, they were closer to 3 billion yen. So it's not like it's completely stuck. And the same thing you can say for the income. It's slowly going up year after year. It doesn't happen every year. I mean, there was one year that was very good, for instance, that was 2019, where they had very much higher sales and profits. But, you know, on average, it goes up a little bit. And the same can be said for equity and, you know, actually, even the other things you would care about in the balance sheet. I mean, it's the equity has been going up just very slowly, but the balance sheet's quality has been going up too. I mean, what I mean to say is that the liabilities have, you know, roughly stayed the same while the cash has been growing.
So there's some value to the going business here as well.
Yeah.
Hard to say what it is, but it has some value. Has the company done anything or said anything that would make you believe that, you know, somehow this cash or securities will come back to shareholders at least a bit in terms of dividends or buybacks or something?
Well, they've done dividends like almost every year, but they're not that big, so not really very meaningful. They have increased them. So like, for instance, in, you know, if we also repeat the 2014 and now, if we look at the progression from 2014 to now, so 2014, they paid in dividends 35 million yen. And this last year, they paid 2015 million yen, but it's not big numbers. So yeah, they do distribute, they don't do buybacks, and they haven't indicated they will do anything. And that's often the case with this company, especially in Japan. I mean, they tend to just, you know, accumulate cash and do nothing about it and act as if it's not really that big of a deal that the cash is just accumulating there and there's no use for it. So yeah, I mean, that's definitely a drawback. If I ran this company, I would probably distribute some of the cash at least. But that's also your big, you know, that's how you control. Well, in this sorts of companies, that's what keeps you from having a very terrible downside.
Sure. Let's move on to the second company, please.
Yeah. So the second company is called Giga Media. It's a company that's based in Taiwan, but it trades in the US, in the NASDAQ. And it's a different story. Well, it's similar in that you can buy it at a big discount to cash. So in this case, it's you know, you're buying it at a 64% of cash minus all liabilities. And this one's a bit more risky, I would say, but the business is a bad business. It's an online gaming business, and they haven't made money of it for years. Probably will never make money of it. But they lose not that much money compared to what they have. So let me turn to the company's balance sheet. So they have today almost 43 million in total cash and about 5.1 million in total liabilities, and they lose, you know, something like 1 or 2 million per year. So that's what their operation costs them. So, you know, it's bad that they lose money, but it's not terrible compared to the amount of cash they have stashed. And you know, I think it's more risky because, you know, they just keep going. I mean, they've been cheap forever, and they may just continue to be cheap forever. I mean, there's also here no indication that something will change. I mean, they tell us that they are trying a turnaround, but they've been telling us that for a long time, and we see no real results. And 2 years ago, they made an investment of $10 million in convertible promissory note of a company called Aeolus Robotics. It's a private company. And I think the CEOs of that company and this company are brothers. It looks terrible. And it's a robotics company that, you know, it's, I mean, I'm no expert in robotics, but it sounds, I mean, their business sounds and their expectations sound far-fetched. So, you know, I'm not counting this 10 million as, you know, having any value when I do the calculation of what I think Giga Media is worth. But it could be worth something. I mean, it's, you're getting the company for less than cash minus all liabilities, way less than cash minus all liabilities. And then you get these things like the 10,000 investment in this robotics company, which, you know, I don't think it will, but it, you know, it could, the chance that it will come to something is not zero. And there's lots of doubts about this company. You know, if I had a wish, I would like to see the cash. I mean, is there really? I mean, it's likely that there's a lot of the cash is real, but I would like to see it. You know, and I can't be sure it's not a fraud. But you know, those are the drawbacks. It's a money losing business. The biggest risk is fraud, but in exchange for that, you have this huge discount to cash. The CEO bought quite a bit of shares in the market. So, you know, if this is a fraud, it's a well-disguised fraud. In 2017 and 18 and 19, he bought quite a bit, and now he owns close to 10% of the company. And he bought the shares at a price higher than today's. And a former director of the company owns an additional 20%. So, you know, they don't issue shares, at least not in the recent past. And you know, it would be a well disguised fraud if it were one. So my guess is, cash really is there, and the business is a lousy business, and they may just keep running it until they consume all the money, but it will take several years for that to happen. It's a possibility, of course. But I think if you buy at today's price, the likelihood of something good happening is high. It's just, I mean, there has to come a price at which you're willing to play this gamble, because that's really the job of an investor to assess the expected value, and I think the expected value here is quite good. Do you want to talk about this one, John?
Yes. Yeah, so this is one I actually looked at a little bit. One thing that concerned me recently, you mentioned that 10 million investment.
Yes.
And I looked at this robotics company, just tried to kind of see, is this for real? And what concerned me a little bit was that any news I could find on this robotics company was like a couple years old.
Yeah.
And when you're, you know, supposedly doing an innovative company and you got no news for 2 years, it's a little concerning. So I don't know how much I'd value that. But the other thing was, it sounded from one of their recent press releases that they intend to invest more cash into these kinds of things. And that, you know, that could make the cash go down, and we don't know whether the investments are any good.
I totally agree. And if you add to that the fact that the CEO of the robotics company is Giga Media's CEO's brother, it's even worse. And you know, he did have a good job at Microsoft, I think, the guy who runs the robotics company. So it's not totally hopeless. But I agree with you. I mean, if I had to buy it, if you forced me to buy the $10 million note from Giga Media, I wouldn't offer, you know, I wouldn't offer 5% for it of what they paid. And yeah, it sounds terrible. But, you know, it's always like this with this sorts of companies. I mean, yeah, everything sounds terrible, but there are, if you have 3, 4, 5 avenues of possible price correction, then, you know, one of them just has to show something positive happening to it, and that's what happens with these things that are so cheap that, you know, any news sets the, you know, corrects the price value difference in a big way. But I agree with you. It's a speculative. I mean, I wouldn't say speculative. That's a dirty word. But I would say it's a risky one. But I still think the expected value is quite good here.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to the third one you have.
So the third one is Sonocom. This one's again a Japanese company. And it's also an old one, not as old as the previous one, but this one was established in 1962. And it makes screen printing plates and printing materials for the electronics industry. And if you take the cash minus all the liabilities plus the securities of this company, and here the securities are bonds and publicly traded stocks, so it's a similar case as the securities for the first company we discussed. It's a very different case as in the securities owned by GigaMedia, which were the shady robotics company. So this is totally the opposite. So this is our publicly traded stocks and bonds plus cash. So if you take that and you withdraw and you subtract all the liabilities, then you're buying at a 30% discount. So I think that's what makes this attractive. So you're buying a 30% of what you would end up in cash and, very similar to cash instruments after you pay everything you own, including the spontaneously arising liabilities of the business. And the business here is also profitable, and it's been profitable for a long time. It's not a wonderful business by any stretch, but if you buy it at today's price, you'd be buying it at a 15 multiple of earnings and a 13 multiple of free cash flow. And if you look at the last 6 years, then today's price corresponds to a multiple of 13 times P. So it's a P of 13, P 6 years of 13, and a price to free cash flow six years of 15. So that was a complicated way of saying it. But what I mean to say is, if you take the average earnings of the past 6 years, you're buying today at 15 times, I mean at 13 times. And if you take the past 6 years average free cash flow, you're buying it at 15 times. So it's, not great, but not terrible. So what I mean is here's also a business that's working, and it's a business that you're buying at a somewhat reasonable multiple, and still you're getting this thing for 30% discount on cash and almost cash. Return earnings, same as with the first company we looked at. So here, return earnings are more than twice as much as the market cap because it's been working, it's been functioning for a long time, and it's been a profitable business. And here, the inside ownership is much higher. This is 33%. So the honorary chairman owns 20% of the company, and the former president owns 12% of the company. Those are good numbers for Japan, I think, for anywhere. So companies that have high insider ownership tend to do better than companies that don't, especially when you're talking about small deep value companies as these are. So that's my case for Sonocom. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them, John.
In terms of the management team, the insiders here, do you know how old they roughly are? I mean, I'm just kind of thinking if they're really old, that maybe something will have to happen at some point in terms of succession, or any thoughts on that?
Yeah. So the CEO of Sonocom is 66. I don't think that, I mean, if he were 80, then maybe you could expect something to happen there, but here I don't know. And in the case of GigaMedia, he's probably much younger because he's a new CEO. He arrived a few years ago. Let me quickly check and I will tell you. Almost the same, 65. And then in the case of Kikukawa, then he is 59. So neither of them is terribly old. No.
Too bad.
I mean, it's good thinking on your part, because, you know, what you want in these types of companies is as many things changing and maybe shining a light on the company.
Yeah. But maybe just a general question, you know, in terms of, do you ever look for management change at these companies or any other things that you have found to actually have worked really well in the past, in addition to just being, you know, really cheap on NCAV? Anything else if you combine the cheapness with something else, that it's kind of even better expected return than just cheap?
Yeah. There are lots of other variables that help you, even those that would appear to have nothing to do with value, like, for instance, the market cap. Well, you first asked me about the management, and, you know, what are normally called catalysts and that sort of thing. I used to look at them, and I found out that I'm not very good at spotting catalysts. So, you know, I know there are people who invest, in, you know, following deep value principles, who look for catalysts, and, you know, whether the company or the industry or the management is trying something different, and maybe that will help unlock value. I don't think I can. So the reason why I do these sorts of companies instead of doing normal investing when you're trying to ascertain the value of the company, you know, 5 years from now, is because I can't do that one. And so I don't try to do it with these sorts of companies either. I found I'm not very good at it. But then you ask if there are other variables too. And there are, like, for instance, I think one of the most important ones, well, I already mentioned insider ownership, that's one. And another important one is size of the company, so market cap. The smaller they are, the better they turn out to be in terms of returns. So companies that are $25 million or so or less, they tend to do better than, say, from 25 to 50 million, and those are better in turn than those from 50 to 100, et cetera. So yeah, the smaller you go, usually the better you do. And then there are a few other variables too. Like, share price is an important one. It would seem to have no, I mean, it doesn't make any logical sense really, but, you know, there are statistically a bunch of stuff like that do make a difference. And we do use them.
I think in the past you once said something I thought was really interesting, that actually if they're losing money, it's better because something has to happen at some point.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the something has to happen bit was my interpretation of the data. And now I'm not so sure. I mean, yeah, I know I told you that, but I think I'm not so sure about that piece of data, the data that says if the company is losing money, it does better than the company that's not losing money. And we're always talking about net nets here. So net nets that are losing money do better on average than the ones who don't. I think that may be a result of the way the studies were conducted, so I can't be sure. That's one of the doubts that I didn't have before and I have now this year, because you know, I studied the data more carefully, and I'm not so sure. But if it does happen, it's probably, well, one reason could be that, you know, in a company that's losing money, like Gigamedia, but in Gigamedia it hasn't happened. I mean, it's losing a little bit of money, and no one seems perturbed. But in other companies, you do see you see the company making a little money. No one feels the need to do a turnaround, but if it's losing a little bit, then, you know, people, I mean, losing, even if it's $1, minus $1 is different than making plus $1. So yeah, we're losing money and we have to do something about it. Tends to be the thinking of management, but, you know, I'm not so sure anymore.
Interesting. So it sounds like you maybe changed your mind a little bit on that, or just not, the data isn't so clear.
Right. Yeah. I thought the evidence was strong, and I don't think so anymore.
Got it. Okay, great. Well, Juan, thank you as always. This is a really interesting kind of tiny segment of the market that I don't think many people look at, but it's certainly an interesting exercise for sure. And appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Thank you also for showing your email address here. I would encourage our members to feel free to follow up if they want to talk about these kinds of deep value bargains. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Best wishes and goodbye for now.
Goodbye. Thanks.